Welcome to Terra Crumbs, the Terra show by the community for the community. I am Eli with Amani and Poppy, but before we get started, Terra Crumbs is for informational and educational purposes only. Nothing on this show is advice. Nothing we say is an inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy. Anything you invest in is at your own risk, and do your own research and consult with professionals. Today we have Larry from Mars Protocol, the inventor of Mars Protocol, here with us today. Larry, how's it going?
Hey, nice to have me. Very good. I'm not an inventor. we're a team of people, of developers, designers, bunch of people. So
that's my fault. I just want to clarify, Larry is not the inventor of Mars. We've met briefly. we all met briefly in Portugal, or for an extended amount of time.
Larry, you were giving out NFTs in Portugal, and everyone got one except for me because my phone didn't have access to the internet up on that mountain you're on.
Oh, come on, Amani. I paid extra to have internet access just so I could get my Larry NFT.
Did you?
I did. It was like 1 cent per megabyte.
I scanned the QR code, but I also did not have service. That was pretty disappointing. Could be like $1 million richer right now, but it is what it is.
Yeah. Has anyone made a market on those? Has anyone posted those on one of the marketplaces?
Dude, you don't sell your Larry NFT. Come on.
I would not sell it.
You can technically buy and sell it on Nowhere. So actually somebody mints like 700 copies of the same NFTs because I didn't have a like one account per NFT limit built in at the time. So somebody was minted a big amount and trying to sell.
I got lucky number 7. So I don't care how many there are. I'm number 7.
Anyway. All right. So what do we, you want to get us in, Eli?
Yeah. So first thing on our topic list is introduction. So my name's Eli, Poppy and Amani and Larry. Second list is our history together. Larry, do you have any good memories of Poppy getting maybe too drunk in any time you've met him?
No.
Is there any story you want to share with us?
No, I laughed that party before everybody gets drunk stage.
To be fair, Eli, in Portugal, I had time to adjust my alcohol tolerance. I was totally fine.
Yeah.
Although I was a bit dehydrated.
Yeah, Poppy, I think you're gonna have to take this away. I don't think me and Larry are on the same at the same place.
All right.
In our brain. I think maybe Larry is just slightly, maybe it's just slightly more advanced than I am in everything crypto. Just
sure,
a little
sure,
bit.
Sure. Let's get into it. So Larry, Mars Protocol launched a couple of weeks ago. The initial launch was a little bumpy, but things smoothed out and it seems to be going pretty well. Do you have any maybe like reflections on that? Like I especially want to like talk about like the Terra infrastructure stuff. Because it seems like there's a lack of infrastructure providers and we're kind of starting to see the impact of that. Could you maybe share your perspective on that as it relates to the launch of Mars?
Right. So like TFL actually has been investing a lot in building new infrastructures. So they created a new infrastructure called Hive, like Hive in HiveMind. Which was quite a feat in terms of engineering. They did a bunch of modifications to Tendermint and created a version of the Terra software that is specialized in reading, but not in writing. So it's like a read-only Terra client, but super duper efficient in terms of reading, which supports a huge amount of query in a very small amount of time. So Mars, I believe, was the first one to use Hive in production. So the Mars Protocol launch was really the first real-world stress test for Hive. So as you could probably guess, we discovered some issues. And so ever since, it has been working pretty good. So that's what happened during the launch. And I do believe that the centralization of infrastructure is an issue. Basically, I think 99%, if not 100%, of all dApps on Terra are using a single node provided by Terraform Labs. So there's definitely things we can do to improve that situation.
Yeah, that's an interesting problem that we have. I mean, if you look at like other blockchains, you see this a lot where like blockchain foundations are subsidizing infrastructure providers, and there's like maybe a couple big infrastructure providers. Like if you look at Ethereum, Ethereum uses, what is it called? I don't know.
Infura,
thank you. And then like Phantom is using RPC.Phantom tools, which is being sponsored by Phantom Foundation. And then in Terra, TFL is hosting the infrastructure. So it's kind of like a interesting problem that I don't think like, well, I mean, there are other infrastructure providers, sure. And especially in Ethereum and Phantom, there's a little bit more options for like just everyday users. But Terra really doesn't really have that. What do you think, how do you think Terra should better decentralize its infrastructure? I mean, I really think like this needs like its own model of like decentralized incentives for infrastructure providers that can maybe be delegated through governance or other means.
Well, first of all, what I think one of the reasons that everybody uses TFL infrastructure is because it's good. It actually handles a lot of traffic pretty well, and it's free. So there's basically no incentive for projects to spend a big chunk of money to build their own infrastructure when the benefit they get from that is not big compared to just using Terraform Labs infra. So I think the issue is the lack of incentivization when you can already get pretty good stuff for free, right? It is, right?
Well, that's go ahead, Mike.
I mean, does that mean that Terra basically would need to start, if it wants people to do their own infrastructure, Terra would need to start restricting access to it so people are kind of forced to?
That would be negative incentivization, I would think. Preferably, we want positive incentivization, but that's harder. So
yeah.
I don't have a very good idea on top of my mind how can we positively incentivize people running their own infra. So I don't have a good suggestion as of now.
So I think the other issue is while these dApps use TFL infrastructure, it's not necessarily the dApps that are doing like the callbacks to the TFL infrastructure. It's the end users, in their browser, it's communicating with TFL infrastructure. There's probably exceptions to that. I really think like this is where like a whole new model needs to be designed. I mean, we have like I see two ways of addressing this. The way that it's been typically addressed is where these blockchain foundations subsidize infrastructure providers to provide infrastructure to everyone. But like, I don't think that's like a long-term option. Like I much prefer like a more decentralized and community controlled kind of structure to this. Okay. I want to throw out an idea. This is just an idea. I haven't put a lot of thought into it. What do you think about like a validator incentive program, Larry, that would incentivize validators or basically subsidize validators to provide public infrastructure with like a certain amount of spec? It would need to handle like a certain amount of users. And then the way it would be subsidized is through delegations that could then be voted on, you know, through community governance or maybe even like a dApp protocol or something.
Yeah, the thing is, they can definitely do that. The thing is whether protocols will use that when they still can use lcd.terra.dev for free.
Well, I guess like part of the problem is I don't know this for sure, but isn't like the wallet injecting like the RPC endpoint, or is that not how it works? I guess maybe it depend on the implementation.
So, many other wallets will allow you to choose your own RPC endpoint. Like MetaMask allows you to choose that. If you run your own node, you can even select your local host, right? I don't think TerraStation or Kepler wallets or even XDeFi currently supports these. So I think a good point to start is to have wallets to support this. But also, so there are two issues really. There is first reading the blockchain. Like you go to Mars Protocol front end, it will show you how much debt you currently owes. That is performed by your browser. And when you send a transaction, that is handled by your wallet plugin. So like the traffic comes from two sources, the browser, which reads the blockchain, and your wallet app, which writes to the blockchain. So we really need to address both.
So interesting. Right side,
yeah.
Yeah. So on the wallets injecting an RPC endpoint, I've actually noticed, because I've been actually trying to use my own nodes in some of these dApps, and it's just not possible. But I've noticed on Anchor Protocol, if I were to use a custom node, it does send some requests to my custom node. And maybe I'm like misreading, because I'm looking at like network logs, and maybe I'm just looking at, you know, maybe it's just something I'm misreading, and it's actually the browser extension sending those requests.
Yeah, that could be the case. I think that's the case for Ethereum. So Ethereum web apps just uses the RPC instance injected by the wallet. I'm not quite sure if that's the case for Terra stations. I'm not super expert on that, but what I do know is Mars front end doesn't use the wallet instance. It uses Hive, right? So I think it depends on specific apps.
Cool. So maybe diving more into like Mars Protocol. So after the initial launch of Mars, there was another product built on top of Mars called Field of Mars that was launched. And it seems like that's been quite a successful launch so far. I wanted to maybe talk about that. And I don't know if you can maybe give us some alpha on, you know, are there plans to expand those Fields of Mars markets? Or is this more of like a proof of concept to show what can be done with uncollateralized, well, I mean, uncollateralized is kind of a deep term, but, you know, uncollateralized loans from Mars, you know, to enable leverage yield farming.
Yeah, and maybe before we go deep on it, just so I understand, so if you're in Mars Protocol, you have the Red Bank, which is just a normal money market, right? Like right now, you could deposit Luna, UST, or Mirror, I believe, and Anchor potentially, and you could borrow against that. Are those the four collateral types?
No, so on Red Bank, I believe it only supports UST and Luna currently.
Oh, just UST and Luna currently. Okay, yeah, got
currently,
it.
Currently only Luna and UST, but the main reason is the other assets mostly lack Oracle options, like ST Luna, Luna X. We need to figure out an Oracle solution before we can add those collateral types.
And then what about like other, you know, app tokens, you know, Anchor, the Mars token, Astroport token, those need to be voted on by the community?
Yes, they will be added by on-chain governance.
Got it. Okay, cool.
Yeah, so really, if you want to do it now, you can submit an on-chain proposal now to add those tokens. But generally, I think we should go over a process with risk assessments, that sort of thing.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay. Mm-hmm. So just to clarify for everyone who's listening, you know, the Red Bank is basically a place for you to deposit your Terra tokens and then borrow against them if you need to, similar to Anchor, but whereas Anchor uses liquid staking derivatives, these you can use, presumably in the future, any, you know, Terra token that has been approved by on-chain governance in the Red Bank. Now, so then going to the Fields of Mars, maybe a brief description of what that is and how it fits in with Mars Protocol.
Yeah, sure. So you might have heard that Mars Protocol not only extends loans to individuals, they also can lend to smart contracts. And for smart contracts specifically, we have this feature called C2C lending or contract-to-contract lending, which is another way of saying uncollateralized lending. So if your contract has built-in logic that ensures the contract can always repay, can always stay solvent, then your contract can apply for an uncollateralized credit line from the Red Bank. Basically, the Red Bank can say, you can borrow up to $1 million without depositing any collateral first in Red Bank. You can just take that USD. And the reason we can grant that without the collateral is your contract has built-in mechanisms to ensure that it is always able to repay. So what you can do is, with these uncollateralized loans is up to your imagination. But the most obvious use case is yield farming. So imagine you put down $100 worth of Anchor token, for example, and borrow $100 worth of UST, then you will have $200 working for you and generating yield in the yield farm. So that is the idea behind Fields of Mars. So Fields of Mars, if you come from Ethereum, it's quite similar to Alpha Homora or Alpaca Finance. It's a leveraged yield farming protocol. Currently, we operate on a few popular farms, including Anchor Token, Mirror Token, and Luna UST on Astroport. So we currently have about 30 million assets deposited. And that number is limited by the cap, as I mentioned, because we have a limit of how these strategies can borrow from Red Bank. And two of three strategies we are having have already reached that limit. So that's why we are not seeing its TVL going further. So increasing those rates is also something that is being discussed in Mars community. So let's see what happens.
Got it. And so you can borrow. Oh gosh, Poppy, break that down for Eli.
For Eli, yes.
So basically, you know, we call it uncollateralized lending, but it's actually collateralized, and built into the contract is some sort of liquidation function that would keep the position liquid. So basically, you put up, like in the example of Fields of Mars, you'd put up ANC token, you would borrow UST from Red Bank, that would be put into LP, and then that would be deposited into Astroport. And I think Astroport is also yield farming on Anchor. And then, you know, there's a certain liquidation price. If ANC went below a certain price, then there's probably also a buffer there, and Larry can speak to this. There could be a liquidation where your position is liquidated in order to keep Red Bank solvent, basically. Did I explain that well, Larry? Got anything to add there?
Yes,
that makes sense. Okay, so, and then is that also like the available strategies on that, are those also determined by governance as well, so there will be more added in the future?
So governance will decide which yield farming strategies they will extend that uncollateralized credit line to. So if you don't extend those credit line, then those strategies will not function. So governance would basically decide which strategies will be available.
And so governance, Larry, would also determine, governance will also determine if you're going to increase the amount of that strategy that's available as well, the amount that you would loan out to a certain strategy.
Yes.
All right, go ahead. So go ahead, Pop.
No. Finish.
I was just going to say, this is a big... This is going to take a lot of governance participation. Have we seen anything go in yet? Have people started to make proposals?
Right. I think governance in Mars protocol is like really important because, your vote actually matters because you're locking your own Mars tokens, which is designed as a layer of safety against hacks or other shortfall events. So if governance decides to grant uncollateral credit line to an unsafe strategy, like you didn't audit the contracts well, or it fails to accurately estimate the risk, and our money market gets wrecked, then your Mars token may be liquidated to cover those loss. So it's really important for our governance participants to do due diligence and assess the risk well.
Wow, that's
Cool.
something that you and I are on the same page on. Something we both get very well.
Yeah, because I do remember, Cream Finance on Ethereum. Well, this happened once, right? They granted to their credit line to some protocol, and that protocol got hacked. I remember, couldn't remember which.
Yeah, that's right. I can't remember
So,
which one it was either, but yeah, that's what happened to them, right? And they got wiped out completely.
yeah, well, Cream got hacked itself as well, but that's a separate
Oh,
instance.
this was the other one. This was the other one. I thought it had something to do with Alpha. I think that first one had to do with Alpha Amora.
I think the Alpha one was Cream got hacked. Alpha was fine. So
Oh,
Cream
okay.
got
Got it.
hacked and Alpha was hacked. And there was another instance where it's the other protocol got hacked and Cream was impacted. So, yeah.
All right, so I want to throw a crazy idea out there, Larry, and I want to get your thoughts on this. We talk about this uncollateralized lending being used for yield farms, but it could really, expand to like some really interesting use cases. What do you think about a smart contract protocol kind of built on top of MARS uncollateralized lending that would take loans in BLUNA, swap it to, sorry, take loans in LUNA, swap it to BLUNA, and then unwrap the BLUNA and then repay the loan? What do you think of that? Like, because that would like maybe be like unsolvent for the 21-day period, but after that time lock, it would be able to repay the loan.
Say that again. I borrow what? I borrow
So
Luna.
think about a protocol that borrows LUNA, swaps it for BLUNA, and takes the 1 to 2% spread, and then immediately unwraps it into back into LUNA. Obviously, you have to wait 21 days in order for that to happen. Do you see that as a use case for these uncollateralized loans? Because these loans would technically be unsolvent for that 21-day period? Or do you think that's actually a viable use case for this?
So you're basically, it's kind of like buying a bond. Like your assets are locked for 21 days, but at the end of 21 days, you will be getting back a little bit more, right? So it's
Correct.
like buying a zero coupon bond.
Yes.
And you're basically asking money from Red Bank to borrow that bond.
Correct.
Well, I do think it's a legit use of uncollateralized loan, but whether to really do it is up to governance.
Okay. All right. Interesting. It's something I've been thinking about.
Poppy, you have to stake your Mars and submit the proposal.
I gotta learn how to write smart contracts first.
Ah, okay.
You don't know how to write smart contracts? Oh my gosh, that's
Not
embarrassing.
on Terra.
Never catch me admitting that, man. I would just keep that to yourself.
Cool. So Larry, do you I mean I haven't been too involved in the Mars forums. Are there any other protocols that are looking to build on Red Bank right now? Is there any kind of talks about maybe spec or different yield farms that are looking into integrating with Red Bank?
Yes, there are two applications going on. One is Apollo, the other is Stack slash Alpha. They are collab on this. So
Oh,
they use
so
my code. So they will be basically similar yield farms, similar to the current Fields of Mars experience, but they will offer more diverse farming opportunities.
And you mentioned Alpha. Is that Alpha Homura or Alpha
Yes,
DeFi Lab?
yeah. So they're collaborating with Stack on creating these smart contracts based on my code.
Oh, very cool. So is this going to expand the leverage yield farming into like assets such as like mirrored assets, or can you be really speak to that now?
Yeah, possibly mirrored assets. Possibly. I'm not quite sure about their roadmap. I have only seen their code, and their code could certainly support mirror assets, but whether they will actually do that, I'm not sure.
Cool.
Yeah, because an issue with mirrored asset is that most of them don't have very deep liquidity. Like Anchor token or Luna. So their price could potentially be manipulated. So that introduces some new questions for on the risk side.
Yeah, and idea there is you could with low liquidity, you could potentially manipulate the oracles and
So that the question is, do we use the mirror protocol oracle or do we use the actual market rates of that mirrored asset? That's a question, right? You can argue for we should use the mirror oracle because that's eventually what the price will converge to. But you can also say we should use market rate because if you want to liquidate, that is the price at which liquidators will execute their liquidations.
So given the current spreads on Mirror, like almost all the spreads are above 5%, I would say it'd be quite dangerous to use the actual asset oracle. You'd have to use market oracle, I think. But
yeah, I agree. In any case, is this a much riskier than those blue chip tokens, right? So we should be careful on this.
So when do you expect to see, because everyone's been looking forward to Mars for a while. the reason I've been looking forward to it is, you know, there hasn't been a whole lot to do with, even if you believe in the project, right? Projects on Terra, you haven't been able to do a whole lot with your tokens outside of Luna, basically, to make them productive other than yield farm. And on other chains, there are opportunities, right? Like I've always used, when I'm holding like this kind of long tail of assets, I've always used like Rari Capital to be able to at least borrow against them a little bit and add some extra yield or throw the Monave or wherever I could find that was accepting them as collateral. When do you think we'll start to see more collateral types being added? And do you think that will help support the price a little bit? Because, you know, instead of just kind of sitting there and watching the token sit in your wallet, you can borrow against them. You can make them a little more productive for you.
Yes, certainly. So we're already in the discussion of adding Stake Luna and Luna X. And there's Anchor Mirror token, Astra token, Mars token. These are the obvious ones. I'm also trying to push our community to add Atom and Osmo, so IBC tokens, a secret example. They kind of have low liquidity on Terra, so that's an uncertainty, but I think it should be a good idea because there's literally no other place where you can borrow against Atom, right?
Right.
So we would be the first. So.
Yeah, it makes sense.
I mean, you see the USD borrow rate on Red Bank is pretty low. And the reason on that is twofold. I think first is because we have this cap on Fields of Mars. And the second reason is we don't have many collaterals, right? So you probably don't want to put down Luna and borrow USD when you can otherwise stake Luna for a 10% annual yield.
Larry, I actually think there's a yield arbitrage there where you could deposit liquid Luna as opposed to like B Luna on Anchor. And you could take a loan out in UST and throw it into Anchor and earn 20%.
Yeah, definitely. The only reason I think people aren't doing that is because they don't want to put down unstaked Luna in Mars for some extended time, right? Otherwise, I can't really think of any reason why people aren't doing this arbitrage thing.
Yeah, and I also think like the UST supply is probably a bit high as people took kind of that low risk opportunity to lock their UST for a few months and you know get airdropped or lock dropped Mars token.
Yeah. I mean, in any case, I think the thing we need to do in order to boost utilization of Red Bank is to increase the caps and to add more collateral types. So
you mentioned earlier that you're talking about potentially adding, I think it was Atom and Osmo to Mars. And that kind of leads into another topic we have on our list here, which is in regards to IBC relayers. So most people, I don't know if they know this or aware, but Larry, you run a validator for Terra. And I'm not like sure what your role is in IBC, but maybe you could speak to that. I could have sworn I read a Twitter thread where you're talking about running a relayer and Could you maybe like get into that a little bit?
Right. So first of all, I'm running I'm running exclusively one channel, which is Osmo Terra channel. There are other channels, but I'm not running those. My channel went down for 12 hours last night. So if you try to send a transaction between Osmo and Terra during that time period and it didn't work, that's because I, my issue. So sorry about that.
Wait, so, but are you the only? Are you the only one? Are you the only one running one of these? Like, if you're out, like the whole thing goes down.
I'm the only one running the Osmo Terra channel. So if my node goes down, it will go down. So that's what we're discussing here, right? So
yeah,
I want to explain why I'm the only one. So the reason is there are two reasons. The first is because IBC relaying is not incentivized. So let's say you send some token from Osmo to Terra. So these two blockchains doesn't communicate with each other directly. You need a party called the relayer to watch what happened, what is going on Osmo. The relayer says, the relayer sees, hey, this guy sends a transaction, and he will take that transaction and post it on Terra. And the IBC module on Terra will release the token to your recipient address on Terra. However, to post that transaction on Terra, the relayer pays the gas fee. So not only the relayer is not getting any revenue for doing this, they are paying out of their pocket for this. So I'm running a relayer because I think it's a public good. I'm making quite some money from my validators, so I think I should give it back to the community. So I'm spending about $5,000 a month on this, but that's not for everybody, right? So this thing is voluntary, and there's no financial gain in doing this. So not many people run relayers. That's the first reason. So what solutions do we have? There is an IBC standard currently in the work that will allow the users to pay the fee instead of the relayer. So that is in the work. That's one. Secondly, we can introduce a special rule in the Terra software to make IBC relaying gas free, which we are already doing for Oracle feed transactions. Right. So Cosmos Hub is doing this. So Cosmos Hub will soon make IBC relaying gas free. Now there is a concern of how do we prevent spamming? Like, because IBC relaying is permissionless, you don't need to be a validator to do this. And if it is gas free, what is stopping me, a bad guy, from spamming thousands of transactions per block and basically occupy the whole block and nobody else can do anything? Well, that's a question. So how do we prevent spamming is something we need to figure out. So that's the situation, the first problem, the lack of incentivization. The second issue is a bug currently in the IBC module. The bug is that it can't reject redundant IBC packets. So if let's say I send a transaction from Osmosis to Terra, and there are two relayers, both watching the Osmosis events, both of them can relay my packet from Osmo to Terra. So so normally you would want to only take one of such packets and reject the second, but that's not what's happening. If those two packets arrive in the same block, they will both be included in the block. So both relayers will pay fee. Although only the first one that comes will take effect. Second packet will not do anything because it's redundant, but still, both transactions are valid, both relayers are paying fee. So the result is that the second relayer basically paid fees for nothing. And I said $5,000 a month, and one relayer will be paying fees for nothing. That's not very, very ideal. So the situation is, in order to avoid redundancy, most channels are only relayed by one person so that people don't waste money relaying redundant packets. So I know this is also being worked on. People are pushing an update to the IBC module to fix this bug. The thing is, how fast will Terra upgrade to that patch? Obviously, Terra is still running IBC version 1. Well, most other chains are already on version 2, or version 3 is also in the work. So yeah, I definitely hope Terra can use a more like aggressive upgrade schedule instead of waiting for Code 6, you know.
So interesting. So
what about the incentivization problem though, right? That feels like a design flaw for IBC. Shouldn't there be fees or something baked in for relaying transactions that go to the people who run these relayers?
Yeah, as I said, there is a new IBC standard being the work that will add the fee payment mechanism.
Oh, but no, I mean, I thought what you meant by that. So let's make sure I understand that. I thought you meant that it would just pay the gas fee that you're currently paying yourself, but will it also pay you a fee for relaying the transaction?
Well, I'm not quite sure about the details of that new standard, but I think the relayer still needs to pay the gas fee on the destination chain, but it can specify a fee that the user also needs to pay on the source chain. I could be wrong, but I think that's what we're...
Oh, so potentially that's the solution then.
Yes. So there's also a forum post on Terra Agora, posted by PFC, another validator, just today on whether TFL should, or not TFL, our community pool, whether our community pool should delegating to validators who are relaying, right, as a form of incentivization. His post has prompted me for going down.
Yeah, but isn't that feels like a band-aid for, to me it feels like there's a larger, more fundamental problem with like how IBC is designed from an incentive perspective. No? Or do you think that's that'll be resolved by this update? Because then you can charge a fee for relaying, and there's a business model for being a relayer.
Like, well, so IBC fundamentally is just a message relaying protocol. So in the eyes of the IBC protocol, all these messages, tokens, whatever you're relaying are just raw bytes, like zero and ones. IBC doesn't even know what those things are. So
yeah,
in the most fundamental term, IBC doesn't have fees. That's doesn't have a incentivization mechanism. That is by design. So all these token transfers, NFTs, and fee stuff we built on top of IBC protocol is just the like an additional application layer of the protocol. So I wouldn't say it's an oversight, but it is something that is lacking. So I'm very looking forward to see how that new standard comes along. I think it's needed.
Yeah. Cool. So I've been lost this entire time. just trying to keep along, but does that conclude the topic? Because I honestly don't know.
Yeah, I think so.
Poppy, is that what you're getting at, Poppy? No, sorry.
Yeah, no, that was a really fascinating overview of some of the issues with IBC and kind of some of the you know trade-offs that are being taken.
So let me ask you a quick. Yeah, I did not realize that was such an issue because IBC is such a smooth experience. Just transferring from one to the other is, it's so clean. I love going in using Osmosis. I think one of the other things I've seen you, one of the things that's challenging, Larry, and I don't know what the background is on this, but the other thing that's a little weird is you can't connect your Terra, station, your Terra wallet directly to IBC either, right? Like you've got to transfer from one Terra wallet to another Terra wallet, and then you can enter IBC.
Yes. That's not an IBC thing. That's a Terra wallet app thing, and I can explain. So, okay. So here it is. You have your mnemonic phrases. your seed phrase, and you have your private key. So there is an algorithm that generates your private key based on your seed phrase. And you can generate a very big, you can generate multiple private keys from one seed phrase. So basically the function will take your seed phrase and take a few parameters and put them into some super complicated math and generates your private key. So what are those extra parameters? Well, so in the there is a thing called BIP39, which is a Bitcoin Improvement Proposal 39, which is a document that outlines what those parameters are. So there are a few parameters, including what chain this private key is for, what are the purpose of this private key, and this and that. So almost every chain have a number in that registry. Like Bitcoin is 1, Dogecoin is 3, I think. Litecoin is 2, maybe. Cosmos is number 118. Terra is number 330. So when you put your seed phrase into Terra Station, it generates your address and your private key based on the parameters 330. When you put the same seed phrase into a Kepler wallet, it generates your private key and your address based on the parameter 118, which is the Cosmos one. So that's why you put the seed phrase into different wallets to get different addresses. So you can perfectly send IBC transactions from your 330 address, but Terra Station doesn't support that. So this is something that I'm pretty disappointed. I think it should be a pretty easy fix from the Terra Station wallet side to just add an option for users to select 118 or 330.
Now, if you're already using it based on 330, you would just have to move over to a new wallet if they did that, though. You would have to create a new public key or private key.
So currently, what users have to do is to send found from their Terra Station wallet, which is the 330 one, to Kepler address, which is the 118 one, and do IBC transfer from their Kepler address. So what I'm saying is, Terra should just forget about 330, their parameter. Just use 118. I think every Cosmos chain should just use 118. So to like have a more coherent experience across all Cosmos chains. So there are a few chains still not using 118. Secret has a different coin type. They have their good reason. They want privacy, that's fine. Thor chain has their own coin type, which I don't understand why. But yeah, as said, I think every chain should all use the Cosmos coin type 118. For user experience, for the sake of UX, yeah.
Fascinating. So Larry, I want to go back to the IBC relayer conversation and just maybe like summarize the issue there and my understanding of the different solutions that you were discussing. So the issue today is that IBC relayers are not being incentivized. And there's potential solutions around either removing the fee for relayers, but that comes with the risk of a malicious relayer spamming transactions against the network for zero fees. And then there's also discussion of maybe charging the user a fee, which kind of seems like the right answer. And then there was also another potential solution of subsidizing relayers using delegated Luna to validators who are providing the service. Is that a accurate understanding?
Yes.
Cool. Okay, I think we've got maybe time for one more topic. Do you guys want to maybe get into the LFG Bitcoin reserve and kind of talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, let's do it. That sounds good.
So I'll just explain what we know and kind of what we don't know, and then maybe we can discuss from there. So I don't know, maybe it started a couple months ago. Doquan announced that, well, maybe it was like a month or a month and a half ago. Doquan established, well, not necessarily Doquan, but LFG was established and Doquan is part of that. And LFG is a nonprofit based in Singapore, and LFG was bootstrapped with Luna from TFL. And over, the past month, we've kind of gotten some more understanding of what role LFG is going to provide to the community, and they're funding different grants and have different initiatives. And one of those initiatives is building a Bitcoin reserve or a Forex reserve that provides a buffer to black swan events in the event that UST is depegged. And to get into that a little bit more, if there is excess UST selling pressure, UST could potentially go below peg, which would cause arbitragers to buy UST under a dollar and then use that UST to then mint Luna and then sell the Luna at the market for a profit of the difference. So you can use one UST to mint $1 worth of Luna. So if UST is below peg, there's an arbitrage opportunity there. And so what this Bitcoin reserve or this decentralized Forex reserve does is it provides an additional buffer in the event of a major depegging event in which there's a huge UST sell-off. And so what we know about the Bitcoin reserve so far is that Dokon has announced that LFG is going to basically use some of their Luna reserves to mint UST and swap it for Bitcoin over a period of time. We don't really know too much about when they're doing this or how much Bitcoin they've bought so far. And then what we don't really know is how this Bitcoin will be used to stabilize UST in a depegging event. And I think what we can maybe speculate on is kind of the different ways that this could be implemented. And maybe Imani, you probably have to stay out of this conversation because
Yeah,
you know too much.
that was the point. I couldn't get into it. Yeah, but go ahead.
So I guess like one of the concerns I've seen, or one of the like valid points of criticism, is yes, a Bitcoin reserve to stabilize UST is great and take some of the pressure off of Luna. But how are they going to do that in such a way that it's decentralized and not controlled by a centralized entity such as LFG? So Larry, I want to kind of open the floor. Do you have any thoughts, opinions on this at all? Are you a Bitcoin fan, or do you think it's stupid to buy Bitcoin, or what?
I don't quite understand the argument that LFG must be decentralized. Like, even let's say LFG is super centralized, controlled by Do himself, right? Let's say it doesn't change anything of the Terra protocol. The Terra protocol is still decentralized, and LFG didn't get any of its funds from community pool, so it doesn't like have any obligations to answer to the governance. So why does LFG must be decentralized?
So I don't think that's the argument. I think the argument is criticizing, building a Bitcoin reserve, but we don't really know how it's going to be made available in the event of a UST depeg. Is there going to be a protocol that acts as a, price stability, like a PSM, like on, with like DAI or MakerDAO, where you can exchange UST for $1 worth of Bitcoin? Like nobody knows how that's going to be implemented. And I think that's where the criticism lies in
No,
building the Bitcoin reserve.
that's super simple. Like, you just market by Luna. That's how you do it. You just sell your Bitcoin and buy Luna. That's how you stabilize the peg. Because I posted a thread about UST stabilization mechanism a while back, and the conclusion is that when UST goes below one, where do you find value to bring it back to one? Well, the answer is the value comes from Luna buyers in the open market. So how do you use your Bitcoin reserve to stabilize UST? Well, you just buy Luna. You just in that case, the value to stabilize UST comes from your Bitcoin reserve. It's super simple, just like that.
Interesting. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Because in the event of a depegging, Luna price would suffer, and and having some stability there, you know, through a decentralized, or not decentralized, just through an entity that's providing Luna buying pressure or liquidity on that, on the bid side of Luna is yeah, a way you could stabilize the market. Interesting. I'm gonna ask the question. You can totally turn this down. Amani, do you think we'll eventually learn more about how this is going to work?
The question is if you'll learn more about how it's
Yeah,
going to work.
if I'm not pushing for details.
Yeah, I would hypothesize that you would
Okay.
learn more about how it would work in the future.
Okay, so if we will, can you also tell us when we will?
No, I cannot. I cannot. But I could say it's, you know, without a doubt, should happen before 2026, 2027.
That's a good,
Okay.
yeah, that's a good time frame. I would agree.
Yeah, no, I don't have any. Actually, I don't have any intel there. I mean, look, I know they're like you said, Poppy. There are different ways you could do this. There are a lot of different mechanisms that could be deployed. I actually have no insight into which one it's going to be or like when that would be announced. But
Okay, on
I'm
that
sure.
note,
What I would say is LFG has it definitely has a plan. You know, that before they would have done all of this.
all right. On that note, I want to just share a new marketing video that I found on Twitter,
I still haven't seen this yet.
for UST. I think.
I have a pen. I have pineapple. Pineapple pen. Apple pen. Pineapple pen. Pineapple apple pen. Pineapple apple pen. Dance time.
Where did that come from? Who did that?
I shared it to you guys in the private chat, but I think it's like Luna
Okay.
Lagos or something. He's been pumping out these videos. Like he did like three or four of them yesterday. I was like just crying in laughter after this one. It was so good.
It's amazing.
All right, well that's all we got. Eli, you wanna take us out?
Damn, already. Man, all right. Well, hey, thanks, Larry, for coming on. Unfortunately, like I just had a lot of brain fog today. I couldn't focus, and that's why I didn't contribute much. That's the only reason why. Thanks for coming on. If you like this video and you want to keep watching, please keep following us. Like, subscribe. We love you. Oh, also, thank you, Larry, and we love you. Bye.